There's a new documentary out called The Sign, and it stirs a discussion of Confederate memorials and the issue of race. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. Plaque sits quietly in downtown Salisbury, just near the courthouse. It's often shaded by trees and may not be noticed by a passerby. This historical sign, put up in the 1960s to memorialize Confederate General John Winder, has drawn attention from activists and politicians alike. It is this plaque which is the subject of a new independent documentary called The Sign. The film not only discusses the general and the Confederacy, but also race relations in Salisbury, including the lynching of a black man, Matthew Williams, in the 1930s. The film will be shown at the Ocean City Film Festival that runs from March 9th through the 11th. In our studios this morning, Dan O'Hare, he's the executive producer of the film. He's also, by the way, running for the Maryland House of Delegates seat, that's 37B, as a Democrat. Also, Torres Wise, who is one of the directors of the film, and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So, Dan, how did you get started in looking at The Sign? What intrigued you about it and the fact that eventually it wasn't just a short film? It went on for a while there.
Right. So the whole thing started when we were in the Ocean City Film Festival last year. And I had met Therese before, but it was really at the film festival where we all connected. And there was a group called the Delmarva Film Collective that got together after the film festival. We were just going to get together, watch movies, make a couple short films, like have some fun. And I said, I have the perfect idea for a short film. 10, 15 minutes tops. We'll be done. This was in June, I think we started talking about it. I'm like, we'll be done by end of July, guaranteed. So I convinced a few people to start working on it, including people that aren't listed here. Kristen Helf, Bernie Wright, Mark Decker, and BL or William Strangmoya, who is also part of the Ocean City Film Festival. We all got together. We all started working on it and ended up capturing over 70 hours of footage, interviewing, going deep, deep, deep down a rabbit hole we didn't expect to go down. And at one point, the cut was, I believe, 7 hours long, I think.
So what attracted you to this this particular issue?
I feel like art needs to reflect its community that it's made in, wherever that art is made. And art is very personal for everyone. So, you know, certain things, it's not like a universal thing. It's certain things, people react certain ways to art. But when you looked around the community and you saw what was happening, there's something very obvious in this community that that is an issue. And it goes back a long way to the 1600s. And it's something that I saw when I was growing up, and I assumed I left the area for a good 20 years. And when I came back, I assumed, you know, that would be fixed. And I was surprised that it wasn't. And The Sign was sort of a, as Mark Decker likes to say, it's our MacGuffin, you know, it's the thing that gets us there. But it is a sign. It's a sign of other things. And, you know, we have some problems, and the best way to confront it is just, in my opinion, head on. So that's what we did.
Torres, what about you? What attracted you?
Oddly enough.
Or had you noticed the sign before, by the way?
I had not noticed the sign before. When I was the first approach about the project, honestly, I was like, who cares about that sign? I was dealing with so much, trying to help people in my community, in the black community, understand financial literacy and things of that nature. I was like, that sign doesn't matter to me at all. But I knew that Dan was a great guy, and the other people who were working on it, I respected them as well. So I was like, well, okay, I'll do it. And as we started working on it, I was like, oh, man. And I really realized, you know, how important this film was and how important it is for notice to be put on that sign, why it's there, when it was put there, and things of that nature. So my actual being involved in the film kind of changed from the beginning to now.
So Dan, describe for me who John Winder is.
I mean,
born in the 1800,
yeah,
winds
yeah.
up as a Confederate general.
the thing is, I didn't know anything about him when we started this. I just thought he was a Confederate general. And I think a lot of people throughout history, especially when you only know them through things like pewter signs on the side of a highway, they're faceless, they're nameless. Their name is the only thing we know, excuse me, but they're faceless. We don't know anything about the personality. We don't know anything about who they are. Once you start investigating, who John Winder is. There's one biography about him that's out, and that person is a Southern apologist and very much a pro Winder, and still he comes across terrible. I mean, he's just an awful human being.
He was in charge of the prisons. Isn't
he? He was in charge of all the prisons east of the Mississippi, and that includes Libby, Salisbury, which is not Salisbury, Maryland, but Salisbury, North Carolina, and Andersonville, which is the famous one. But in all of them, he tortured the prisoners to death. So it's really when and there's you see pictures of some from Belle Island and Libby, and it's like looking at pictures from a concentration camp, So there's no question he's just a terrible, terrible person. But even the most generous light that's cast upon him, it's still a guy you wouldn't want to have a beer with. just really, really not a good person. But you don't get any of that from the sign. From the sign, you just get this feeling that, here's a historical figure, someone that's being honored for some reason. And that was why, as I went through this project, I thought there would be a little more controversy and there would be a little better argument on both sides. But we could get almost no one to argue the other side for us. Even people we thought would, because of events that happened throughout the year last year, before we got a chance to interview them, they changed their mind. So it was very difficult to get anyone to speak to us, who wanted to keep the sign. I know, Bob Culver and John Cannon and we tried approaching Sheriff Mike Lewis as well, and all three of them declined to be interviewed for the documentary. But, other than that, there's not a lot of voices out there other than the ones that are in the documentary that are.
By the way, do we have any sense about why this sign was put up? It was put up in the 1960s.
Sure, yeah.
Any indication as to what the motivation was? Or
it's interesting because, history is not set in stone.
Right.
So we've asked 25 people this and we got 25 different answers. I believe it's a combination of two things. I think everything is there are no two sides to life. There's 300 million sides to this country. So I believe it was a combination of a couple things. One of them being the centennial of the Civil War and another one being during the Civil Rights Movement. So I think there was energy from both of those two events that caused the sign to go up in the first place. It was not originally put in the courthouse lawn. It was originally put on Route 13, right by where Evo is now. But because cars kept running it over for some reason, and noticeably no other signs in Salisbury have ever been run over more than once, they had to move it to the courthouse lawn. So, which unfortunately, when they did that in the 80s, that itself, sends a message, and that's a big problem, So,
Torres, were you surprised at the reluctance of people to talk about it who supported the sign? I know you had a segment, I think, drawn from the protest in support of the sign. I saw that, but were you surprised that people were more vocal about that? Or
I actually wasn't surprised because deep down, I always felt like people knew it was wrong. They knew the reason why it was there, the position it being. They knew it was wrong, and they didn't want to put themselves out there and be interviewed for a documentary and be the face of a person who wants to keep something like that on the courthouse lawn. So I really think people knew it was wrong. So I really wasn't surprised that people would not want to be interviewed at all.
So I want to, as a matter of fact, talk about the political reaction. And I want to, first of all, play a clip of Wicomico County President John Cannon. He's actually at a county council meeting talking about his position in terms of whether the sign should come down or not.
I feel, as was suggested earlier, that there seems to be some sense of hysteria across the country about this. I don't think we're in a racist society, as you're hearing so much in the news. Removing the marker can, I think, create racial divisiveness. I understand he was a bad general. Ironically, he probably killed more white soldiers than black soldiers. The one thing I would like to see this group do, they suggested they were going to put markers up or plaques up for the lynching that occurred. I would much rather encourage this group to put up a marker for Frederick Douglass, because I didn't know that Frederick Douglass spent 2 hours talking at the courthouse downtown. And I think that is very, very important. And there are markers all across the country that are there specifically to remind us of our African-American heritage. And I think that it belongs in Wicomico County.
And this sort of stands in contrast to the Southern Mayor Jake Day, who obviously signed a petition to have the sign removed. Let's take a little bit of him.
We value that they fought for what they believed was right, if not at least a, you know, family or, you know, fighting for the guy next to me, something. I even get like, oh, he was from the area. I even get like, okay, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, somebody thought it was a good idea to put up a sign somewhere. I get all of that. And yet, I come back to the fact that the guy's not from here. Never set foot here. He did serve. He joined the Army, went through West Point. He earned a commission. Then he resigned it. He left. He fought against us. He ran Confederate prisons. He oversaw the Confederate prisons. And thousands, thousands of people who wear the same name tape or the same U.S. Army, you know, insignia that I wear today, a little different, you know, the uniform changes every couple of years now. But they fought for the United States Army. He oversaw their death. He oversaw their starvation, their torture, and their death. Well, we got a sign to the guy on our courthouse lawn. I've got a problem.
And, of course, there's, sort of complete the trio here, Kirkland Hall. He was the former president of the Somerset County NAACP branch and also, of course, now a Democratic candidate for the House of Delegates, seat 37A, who basically essentially told you that the sign belongs in a museum.
I think all history has a value, but it shouldn't be on a showplace like the courthouse for everybody to see. I love museums. And if they want to establish a museum, I'd go visit to read, to broaden my knowledge on the role that individuals played in both armies. But it should be a museum and not displayed publicly.
So there you sort of have encapsulated here the kind of different reactions that we have, obviously from Cannon, from Mayor Jake Day, and then, of course, from Kirkland Hall. How do you assess how the community has reacted to this? It doesn't seem as if anybody's going to take any actions. I sat across in this very studio with Bob Culver, the county executive, who said, unless somebody tells me to take it down, or there's a vote or something like that, I'm not going to do anything about it. What do you make of this rigidity to really speak out about the sign or deal with it in any fashion by governmental officials?
Well, and, you know, I'm going to stick my foot in my mouth a lot on my campaign, I'm sure. But sure. Here's the first time. People are generally ignorant, and they are. Everyone's ignorant of most things. I'm ignorant of most things. But people form opinions very quickly. And that might be a defense mechanism that goes back to well before there was such thing as civilization. But these people have formed an opinion without having the facts. I guarantee it. I guarantee that no one would read the biography of John Winder and think, yeah, let's put up a sign to him.
Right.
Unless they are – there's something very, very wrong with them. So, you know, just watch the movie. That's what I would say to them. You know, like after the movie, if they feel like, yeah, we should honor this person – then that's another discussion that needs to be had about the, you know, the mental health of these people. But I think my guess is they look at the Confederacy as something that it's not. They look at the Confederacy as this, you know, honorable, you know, the lost cause thing or whatever. I'm doing my best not to curse. whatever way they look at the Confederacy is just not true. And on top of that, Winder is the worst of the Confederacy. Like he represents some of the worst. He probably would have been hung. There's a whole other question of, you know, would he have been executed if he survived the war? He of course died of a heart attack just before it ended. And his subordinate Henry Wirz was hung. Henry Wirz was a immigrant. John Winder was not, obviously. So there's that whole question of, you know. Let's see how far they would take that. But yeah, by all accounts, this guy was a monster, and we have a sign to him celebrating him.
Torres, what do you make of the political response? Does it say that we haven't come as far as we thought? I mean, I'm reminded of the Talbot boys, the statue in Talbot County. They voted to keep it. There's no other statue out there for Union soldiers or even African American soldiers who came from the Eastern Shore. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I definitely think it's just people wanting to hold on to that old thinking, you know. I think a lot of people are still prejudiced. So to have some, when you see something like that and people want to take it down, it's like, oh, hold on, you're erasing history. I really think people just don't understand the history behind that particular sign, as I didn't either, you know, because I thought, you know, forget the sign. But when you really look into the history of the sign, you see it's really deeper than just that particular sign. So I really think it's a lot of people just not truly understanding the history, truly understanding what that sign represents.
Well, Torres, what do you make of Cannon's argument that he sees this going across the country, and that it's really a negative thing that we see happening, certainly with a lot of the Confederate statues and memorabilia and flags all now coming down after the shootings in the Carolinas? What do you make of that? I mean, is there a separation between him and what you see as social reality here, or what do you think?
I just personally think his argument is wrong, and I really don't believe that though these signs coming down.
Sure.
I really don't believe that keeping these signs up would do any good for anyone. And he also says if it comes down, it'll increase racial divisiveness. I also would like to say, I just think time is up for a lot of those people. Time is up for a lot of those people who feel like that old way is the way that should be going forward. Time is up for them. So, yeah, to a certain extent, you are losing the country. To a lot of the racist people, you are losing the country. You're going to lose the country. Because all over the world, people are standing up, white, black, and we're coming together and we're fighting that type of thing. So, yeah. They have reason to be afraid. If that's the type of mentality they want to keep, I'm sorry, I'm lost here for words because it's just such a wild argument. When I heard it, I was just totally blown when he said that, you know. And he also goes on to say, oh, you should put up monuments of Frederick Douglass. And I believe there was someone who was pushing to get some more plaques up on
Mary
that.
Shanti.
Yeah. We pushed to get plaques up. About Georgetown. And they totally just said, oh, no, we don't want to do that. So I really think it's a lot of people just holding on to their old ways, man.
Yeah, that was one of the things that really stuck in our craw. When I was at the meeting, I couldn't even get in. There were so many people there, and I was sitting outside. And when he said that, I was like, but Mary Ashanti tried to get a plaque for Georgetown and was denied, you know? And it's like, so wait, now you want to talk about the positive aspects of our past. Well, you know, and avoid the negative. And I think that's the biggest issue, is the whitewashing of history is a huge problem, because people don't think that we live in a racist society because history has been whitewashed. And we do live in a racist society. And you know,
so.
John Cannon saying like, oh, I don't think we live in a racist society, no matter what the media tries to say. It's not the media. It's history. It's history that says this. But if you whitewash history, then maybe you can find a way to think, well, it wasn't a racist society.
Yeah. Let me, by the way, turn one of the big chunks of the documentary is about the lynching of Matthew Williams in 1931. Black labor who's dragged out of the Peninsula General Hospital, which is where PRMC is now, by a white mob. He was accused of shooting his employer some 11 years, Daniel Elliott, in a dispute over wages. There's a dispute as to what exactly happened, and eventually he was lynched, his body burned, and then dragged through the streets of Salisbury in front of the African-American community, which, by the way, extended eastward at the time, as a matter of fact. Why did you feel as if it was important to spend as much time as you did on that particular chunk of history?
I think we wanted to spend a lot of time on that part because, again, it's looking at the placement of the sign. You have the sign here, and no one talks about this guy who was lynched right here on the courthouse lawn. So I think we just really wanted to beat it into the viewer's head that, hey, listen, this is what else happened here. Look at the, you know, how evil people can be. So I think that's why we, and also just for educating, that was something that I didn't even know about, you know, so I was proud to see that, to expand that part just so we could educate people. So I think just education, man, that's why we wanted to put that part in there and have it so long.
And the other thing about the Matthew Williams part, and why Matthew Williams matters is, you know, everyone has made the argument that the most important thing is history. And if you don't, you know, if you don't preserve history, then you're doomed to repeat it, quote unquote, you know. And the sign, you know, people are saying, you know, hands off our history, you know, like save our history with the sign. But the fact is that General Winder, what Winder did, that really isn't something that we're directly facing right now in our society. But what the mob did to Matthew Williams is something we're directly facing right now in modern society. And that's what's so hard. A mob lynched Matthew Williams, and basically the mob acted as the judge, jury, and executioner of him. And that is a current issue right now in society, with so many, you know, unarmed people being shot by police officers. Now, is it the same as lynching? Not exactly the same. There's less people involved, for sure. But the similarity of the lynching is that no one is being held responsible. And that's just like with the lynchings. No one was held responsible for any of these lynchings. And even though everyone knew who did it, and everyone watched, you know, thousands of people watched the lynching of Matthew Williams, and no one was held responsible, and no one stopped them. One person tried to stop him, a preacher, and he was overrun. But other than that.
Torres, do you see that same connection?
Yes, I definitely see that same connection in society today.
So let me ask you this. One of the questions that has occurred to me is whether or not the South, in particular the nation as a whole, has ever actually come to grips with what was essentially a crime against humanity, which, of course, was slavery. And I wonder about that because, as a matter of fact, their discussion when the Talbot Boys statue was being debated, and someone raised the issue of the German experience after the Second World War. And I can guarantee you do not see any monuments to any of the Nazis. Mm-hmm. Near the swastika is forbidden. I mean, they really came to grips with it in a very fundamental way. And it just seems to me that the South in particular and the country as a whole never really came to grips with it. They just sort of settled the issue and then moved on. What do you think, Torres?
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And I think what a lot of people fail to realize is, you know, they'll look to a poor black community and say, oh, why don't you guys work? But you're forgetting that the slave money that was made from your family from years ago, you were able to, you know, grow wealth. You know, you were able to buy houses in certain parts of the country, all off of slave labor. So a lot of people, he was given like a 400-year head start. And so I think people just don't want to come to grips with that. They'll say, oh, I had to work just as hard as everyone else. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. As hard as you had to work, we black people probably had to work 10 times harder to get those positions. So that's one of the things I think it's just really hard for people to understand that, because you may have a person who grew up rough. He didn't have much. Imagine how little a black person probably had, or the opportunities that they had to jump through to get anything in life. So, I mean, it was done by the government. Look at redlining. And that's another topic that we also touch on in the documentary as well. So I just really hope that people can get some sort of education and maybe just change their thinking a little bit.
Dan, how do you address this? Since certainly if there's somebody who's white in this community struggling all of their lives, maybe they've worked in chicken houses, you know, and certainly not a high paying job necessarily, right. Certainly over the years, they don't see any advantage of being white.
No, that's the issue, is that this divide, we try to make the point that it happened somewhere roughly around the Bacon's Rebellion. So we tried to like make a certain point there, but no one wanted to talk about Bacon's Rebellion. So I had to at one point. But this divide of race, this idea of whiteness is very detrimental to the person that has nothing who is white. So this idea of whiteness is what's keeping them poor. And it has kept them poor for a long time because it's divided people. You know, poor people should work together to have a better life. And we should, I mean, obviously, if we were a moral, just society, we have plenty of food. We can make houses. We can heal people. We can do all these things. We don't do that because instead we want to concentrate wealth up to the top. And that's obviously been a big problem in the United States for a long time. To get back to one thing from before, though, with the South not, you know, facing, you know, their thing, the North needs to face it as well. And everyone in America needs to face the fact that they, you know, this country was built on forced labor, on slave labor. And it was the wealth that this country has comes from not paying their employees. And I like Dr. Gaines, who is just a fantastic interview. We interviewed her twice. She was fantastic. But at one point she's like, you know, the reason we don't have a living wage in this country is because we started with zero and then we went to a dollar, you know. It's we you know, and the reason that there's the reason that this can continue is because there's a division between black and white, because there's a belief that, well, at least I'm white, and so I have this thing, you know, this better thing, which is ridiculous. And it's just it's you know, it's another place where, unfortunately, the poor have been exploited. All poor have been exploited because of that. So so yes, of course, they're going to feel like they didn't have anything. They didn't get any benefit. They didn't get any benefit. Their only benefit was, you know, they were told they were a little bit better, and that was it.
How do you reach? How do you cross that divide? I mean, how do you say this? There is a connection.
Well, I mean, you know,
or have you enlightened anyone there, to that?
And this is where my political career ends. you know, it's organization. That's what it is. It's organization. It's you know, there's. And I tried to limit the you know, Marxism in this as much as I could, but it still came out. But it's organization of people together, you know, not based on racial lines, not divided, not, you know, it having having this sign is a monument to white supremacy. It is. It is a symbol saying that, you know, this is the power and we control this power, and it happens to be on the courthouse lawn. Which is another monument to white supremacy. Removing it and putting up a marker to Matthew Williams, you know, or Frederick Douglass even. I mean, I think, you know, that is massively important, and not enough people know that Frederick Douglass spoke here, spoke for 2 hours. And his speech, you know, we wanted to read a speech, but it's 2 hours long. Right? I mean, but it's a phenomenal speech, The Self-Made Man, and I suggest everyone get out there and read it. But it's we don't know that. We don't understand that. And because we don't have that information, we don't have any connection to the past. But if we can get rid of that sign and put up signs that are actual representations of our community and of the past, well, then, you know, maybe that is a sign that we can come together as a people, you know, and not, you know, we have to confront the racism that exists in society and existed in our past. And until we confront it, you know, how are we supposed to come together, and how are we supposed to make a better world? You know,
just briefly, Torres, given some of the changes that have occurred, a lot of the Confederate memorabilia coming down, statues coming down, lots of controversy. We obviously saw this business in Charlottesville. Are you optimistic that things are changing?
A very little bit, a very little bit. I'm not sure I'll even see it in my lifetime. But I always look at the glass as half full. So hopefully so. But for this particular issue, you know, looking around at the world today, I'm really not sure. I couldn't say 100%.
We've been talking about the new documentary, The Sign. And in our studios this morning has been Dan O'Hare. He's executive producer of the film. Also, he's running for the Maryland House of Delegates, 37B, as a Democrat. Also, Torres Wise, who was a co-director of the documentary. And we appreciate you stopping by and chatting with us this morning.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.